Chapter 9. A Most Angry Stomp.
"You do not understand," Drizzt said.
"Oh, but I do, my love," Catti Bree replied.
Drizzt looked her in the eye.
"Of course you're nervous," she said to him. "This is something you have wanted forever, and now it is here. You are afraid that it isn't real, but it is."
"I know it is, and that's what I'm afraid of."
Catti Bree backed away a bit, her face screwing up with confusion.
"I don't know him," Drizzt explained.
"You knew him?"
"Did I, though? I knew a grown man through the lens of one inclined to worship such a figure."
"Originally, yes. But you were no child when you left Menzo Baranzon."
"In many ways I was. I didn't understand the world around me and had no experience beyond the city other than battles. When I look at who I am now, at where I've traveled and the horizons I've crossed, I cannot deny that I have come, slowly and sometimes painfully, to see the world very differently than I did when I first walked out of Menzo Baranzon. Do you remember? I held a vow to never kill a drow above all else. For all of my interactions with the other races, for all of my friendship with Montolio, for all of my growing love of Brunner and Wolfgar, of Regis, and especially of you, I still held dark elves above your races. Such things do not easily resolve."
Catti Bree shrugged, as if that didn't seem so important.
"You are here now. You are who you are now. So what do you fear?"
Drizzt looked down the short hall and through the crack of the partly opened and distant dining area door to see the edge of Zachnefane's shoulder as he waited for them at the dinner table.
"I don't know him," Drizzt said again. "I know what I hoped of him, what I created of his memory, but..."
"He was a friend to Jarlaxle," said Catti Bree.
"So? Jarlaxle is no hero to me. I call him friend, yes, and would help him, as I believe he would help me, would help any of us. He is a trusted ally."
"But he is not your father," she said, completing what he'd left unsaid.
"No. And any admiration I hold for him is based on his skills and bravery, far more than on his morality. He's a friend,
but not your hero," Catti Bree finished. "Zachnefane is your hero.
The thought of him, at least. Often have I asked myself what Zachnefane would do. A useful guidepost, but one, perhaps, that was constructed in my fantasies about a drow who I didn't really know."
"He was pleased that you did not kill that elven child," Catti Bree reminded. "So maybe you don't actually know him, but the fantasy and the reality are not so far apart."
Drizzt nodded, and Catti Bree gave him a hug. He kept looking past her shoulder, though, to the stranger seated at their table, and he couldn't help but be afraid. The human woman was doing most of the talking, and all of it about little things that interested him not at all. After a while, Zachnefane didn't even keep up the pretense of listening to her chatter. His gaze remained locked on his son. And tellingly, he thought, Drizzt wouldn't meet that stare. He sat at the end of the table, to Zachnefane's left, and seemed to be staring off into nothingness, contributing little to the conversation, and nothing at all to the hospitality of this, his home.
"Embarrassed?" Zachnefane wondered,
and a big part of the drow hoped that to be the truth.
"Do you?"
Zachnefane heard then, directed at him. He looked up to see Catti Bree hovering nearby. He had not even noticed her rise from the table. She held a bottle in her hand of some wine. Fey wine, she had called it.
"Yes, yes," he said, motioning to his empty glass.
He looked over to the left to see Drizzt draining his glass, then motioning to his wife for a refill too. Catti Bree filled his glass and took her seat again at the end of the table opposite Drizzt. Zachnefane gave her only a passing glance before turning back to stare at his son.
"What do you remember?" Catti Bree asked then.
"About what?"
Zachnefane replied, a bit more harshly than he had intended.
"Does your life in Menzo Baranzon seem as if it was only yesterday?" the woman asked. Are the memories vivid?
Yes.
And of your time in death, Drizzt interjected. What do you remember of that?
Nothing, he said. Not even nothing, Ness, just nothing. You were not with Lolf, Drizzt remarked. If I was, the pain was not lasting, it would seem. You were not, Drizzt insisted. With the help of some friends, I was able to find you in the afterlife. And you were at peace.
What friends? Zaknafane interrupted, and he looked to Catti Bree quite sternly.
Not her, said Drizzt. Dwarves, then?
Zaknafane asked, his tone as sharp as his look.
Elves, Drizzt answered. Drow?
No, the elves of the Moonwood, far to the east. With their help, I was able to...
You would allow elves to spy on me in my death? Zaknafane asked, his eyes wide.
Would it have been better were it me? Catti Bree interjected.
No, Zaknafane cried, and slammed his fist on the table. You are... I mean...
You do not approve, Catti Bree said.
And Zaknafane followed her gaze back the other way to Drizzt, who was sitting with his hands grasping the table, his breathing labored as if he was fighting to steady himself, perhaps even biting back words.
The room went quiet then for a short while.
So, not embarrassed, Zaknafane thought.
Angry.
Do you?
Drizzt finally asked.
Do I what?
Do you approve?
Of?
You play coy, said Drizzt. Your son is married to an Iblith. Can you even admit that?
What is to admit? She sits right here beside us.
And do you approve? Drizzt asked more determinedly. Zaknafane leaned back in his seat. He looked from Drizzt to Catti Bree and back to his son.
This is all very strange to me, he admitted. And to you, I am sure. But the idea that my son is...
He paused and shook his head.
Say it,
Drizzt prompted. And he stood up and walked down the side of the table to stand directly opposite Zaknafane.
Just say it. That my grandchild would be...
Zaknafane said.
Iblith, Drizzt finished. Say it.
I did not say it, Zaknafane yelled at him, and he too was then standing.
But it is in your mind. It is in your tone, in your stance, in your face.
I would not use that word or that sentiment, but yes, he said. They are not drow, they are...
Inferior, Drizzt yelled.
Yes, Zaknafane admitted. And weak. Weaker than drow, right? Yet in my life among them I have grown. I've learned from humans and dwarves and even halflings and put all that to use. Is that weak? Was it weak when I put you down to the floor in our sparring?
With toys, said Zaknafane.
And he regretted it the moment the words left his mouth. Drizzt stepped back and pulled his scimitars off the mantel at the side of the room.
Drizzt, stop, Catti Bree implored him. These are not toys, Drizzt said, nor are the blades belted at your waist, gifts from Jarlaxle, I would presume. So let us learn the truth, to first blood.
Drizzt!
Zaknafane slowly stood and drew out his twin swords, rolling them in his hands.
Lead on to the training room, he said.
Drizzt!
Catti Bree said again, louder and more forcefully. Why wait? Drizzt asked. And he stepped forward and lifted his leg, bringing it up high above his head before slamming it down. The table in Drizzt and Catti Bree's dining hall was no delicate thing, made of thick wood, intricately carved and planed and sealed with a thick coating of clear varnish made from pine sap. A score of fat dwarves could dance upon it without causing so much as a creak from its heavy angled supports. But Drizzt had been trained by Grand Master Cain of the Monastery of the Yellow Rose, a mere human in Zaknafane's eyes. And into this kick he threw all of his life energy, every mote of his inner strength. His foot descended and struck the wood and cracked it, dropping the table into two halves, all the silverware in goblets and napkins, and the centerpiece tumbling into a heap at that center angle. Catti Bree let out a shout of surprise and fell back, nearly tumbling over. Zacnafane was less startled, and even as the pieces fell to the floor, he was leaping across the gap as Drizzt sprang toward him, the two passing in midair and stabbing, thrusting, parrying with what seemed a single ring of metal against metal. They each landed in a turn, facing each other from opposite sides. Drizzt started as if to jump again, and Zacnafane mirrored him, but Drizzt stopped short, waiting on his side of the broken table. So did Zacnafane, something he found quite amusing, and so he laughed aloud. Drizzt didn't laugh, though, and on he came, no leap, just a stalk, and he set his scimitars to sudden and brutal use, slashing and stabbing alternately, then alternating the other way, and then flipping the sequence hand to hand yet a third time to buy some rhythm. Zacnafane easily matched that rhythm, executing the parries perfectly, angling his body to set up a riposte that would gain him the initiative to lead the next exchanges. Finally, he thought he had it, so he called upon his innate drow magic to summon a globe of darkness, then rolled his hand under in a backhand parry to move aside a thrusting scimitar. And instead of lifting his second blade to block the coming slash, he went low and forward, thrusting his sword with the expectation of scoring first blood. His son had been too eager, too angry, he believed, and this would soon be over. So his surprise was great when Drizzt's blade, the same one that had just executed the thrust, came across in the correct angle to turn Zacnafane's stab harmlessly aside. And then it was Zacnafane who scrambled, falling to his left and crossing his left-hand blade up and over to catch the downward slash of Drizzt's other scimitar. Zacnafane had to give ground and roll under the weight of that strike, but he did so gracefully, keeping away from any tangle with the broken table and coming right back to one knee just outside the globe of darkness. The globe of darkness that then winked out of existence, revealing a surprised Drizzt, though no less surprised than Zacnafane himself. "How dare you!" Catibree yelled from the back of the room, from behind Zacnafane. "Both of you! This is my home!" Drizzt stood straighter, lowering his blades. Zacnafane leaped at him. Across came a scimitar, picking off the thrust, and down went Drizzt, falling into a crouch so low that his butt scraped the ground as Zacnafane's second sword swept above his head. Drizzt spun, extending a leg, which Zacnafane hopped over. "Ha!" he shouted as he jumped, certain once more that victory was his. But as Drizzt's leg crossed under, the ranger reversed the sweep and angled his foot for a higher kick, which Zacnafane hardly noticed or cared about. Because Zacnafane didn't understand the power Drizzt could produce with such a short kick, a kick that moved his foot no more than the breadth of a delicate drow forearm. But the impact was such that it jarred the weapon master and sent him backward, stumbling as he landed from his jump, his hip bruised and pained. He tried not to favor it, hadn't the time to favor it, for Drizzt was there right before him, bending him backward under a barrage of blows. Zacnafane growled against the pain and matched his son strike for strike, rolling his swords horizontally one over the other, in a defensive routine predicated on the need to keep his opponent back on his heels, forcing Drizzt to engage the spinning blades or open up clear avenues for counter-strikes. Drizzt's blades were always there, scimitar clipping sword again and again, a long and ringing meeting of fine metal expertly engaged. Zacnafane was standing steadier now, the pain in his hip having subsided, and sought the opportunity to reverse the flow and disengage, that he could come right back in with a more dedicated offensive routine and so put Drizzt back on his heels. And finally he saw a break, for his rolling sword clipped Drizzt's scimitar and somehow took it from Drizzt's hand, the blade spinning suddenly in response to the strike. Zacnafane brushed it aside and went forward for the win, except Drizzt wasn't there. Zacnafane felt the flat of a scimitar against the side of his neck, just under his ear, his son standing behind him. He hadn't even seen Drizzt move, a ghost step executed more beautifully and completely than anything he had ever witnessed or imagined. In that split instant when he had turned his focus to the freed scimitar, bouncing in the air before him, Drizzt had somehow, impossibly, moved behind him. He gave a helpless chuckle and lowered his blades, then winced at the sting as Drizzt nicked his ear. "Weak?" Drizzt asked, his voice dripping sarcasm. Drizzt's other scimitar hit the floor beside Zacnafane, and his son stalked out of the room. Zacnafane turned slowly to view Catibree, who stood against the back wall, arms crossed, scowling. "Good lady," he he said with a sheepish shrug. I am sorry that you had to witness. Just learn from this, she said coldly. Both of you.
Summon Jarl Axel, Zaknafane told her. I will go.
No,
she replied without hesitation, which caught Zaknafane a bit by surprise.
No, that is too easy and too cowardly.
Cowardly? He tried not to put too much anger in his words. He and his son had just destroyed the woman's dining room, after all.
Drizzt would tell you to go, as you would like to, Caterbree explained. But that would resolve nothing and leave both of you with questions unanswered.
Better than this, Zaknafane said.
With questions unanswered because you both fear the answers? Caterbree said sharply. Cowardly.
This is all strange to me, Zaknafane said.
I know.
I don't know if I...
Neither do I, Caterbree interrupted. Perhaps instead of searching for answers, so...
She looked around at the ruined room,
forcefully. You would both do well to sit back and allow the context of those answers to surround you. That the answers themselves make sense and there can be no doubt.
It is not so easy.
No, said Caterbree. Not for a coward who must hide behind his swords.
With that, she walked out of the room.
Zaknafane wasn't mad about that, but neither did he agree. It was more than strange to him that his son was cavorting with dwarves, with elves even. To Zaknafane's sensibilities, it was offensive. No matter how hard he tried to deny that, there it was, ever present. The notion that his son, his brilliant drow son, had married a human woman and had mixed his seed with the blood of a human woman. How would he ever look upon his grandson or granddaughter with anything but pity?